You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Doom gloom! Doom gloom clap clap! 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 Doom gloom!
I'm sad all the time. I'm sad all the time. Doom gloom. Doom gloom. It is raining outside, but I'm happy inside. Gloom. Shit.
Doom gloom. Gloom doom. Doom gloom gloom doom. Right is wrong and wrong is right and bad is good. Let's start a fight. Did you like the movie or did you call it good night? June gloom, June gloom, June gloom. If you found this opening upsetting, welcome to June gloom. Silence.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures or distributed by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
For the record, I do not believe anything you're going to say on this podcast. And I will be explaining later. It's a lot of explanation. We're going to go deep, everyone. I have a lot to say about why I don't believe anyone on this podcast.
And Erica.
Sometimes I watch Ryan when he's not aware that I'm watching him. And I just think, my God, what is he so stressed about? I do everything. Jesus Christ. He doesn't even have to think about a single fucking thing. Look at him just over there deciding what movie he'll watch. God, I love that man.
That's right. We are ending our second bout with June Gloom. June Gloom 2, Down to Frown. This is the last episode in our series. And, you know, we've gone from the dark edges of a love triangle involving a dead man and Richard's things, the terrors of the country music scene and Nashville Girl. So now let's examine the horrors of two women talking in 1978's Autumn Sonata. That's right, 1978's Autumn Sonata, brought to you by wine. Nothing gets the conversation a-flowing like a good bottle of wine. If you've got a lot of pent-up feelings about, oh, I don't know, your mom maybe, and you really need to get it all out, why not try wine?
Yeah.
Why not? Why not?
Nothing.
Why not?
It's a truth elixir. I mean, just let the conversation flow.
Nothing allows you to go for the jugular quite like wine. Tested over the centuries as the primary catalyst for millions of broken relationships, wine is the ultimate way to get that mouth flapping and yelling and maybe regretting a whole night of conversation. Wine.
You'll be fighting over these sulfites.
Oh, man.
This is directed by our old pal, Ingmar Bergman, the director of Cries and Whispers.
Our old pal. Not my old pal, my old enemy.
Well, you should be happy to know, I believe this is the last movie that...
Don't toy with me, Ryan. I've had wine. This, you better be right. You better be right, or the truth's coming.
This podcast, really, where I think future scholars, film scholars, will be coming for opinions on Ingmar Bergman. But anyway, he directs this. Around this time, he was going through a very difficult period because he had been arrested for tax evasion.
I hope so. Honestly, I hope he was.
I mean, yeah, right. He was at his happiest when he made this movie.
He was arrested for something he did on purpose himself? Yeah, that does sound like a tough time.
He was acquitted, but he was arrested for tax evasion, and he was eventually cleared, but he left Sweden as a result, and he moved to Munich, where he then directed 1977's The Serpent's Egg, with another old pal, David Carradine, and, of course, Liv Ullmann, which was made for...
Was that a new world?
No. It was made for Paramount.
Oh, thank God. Oh, thank you!
Oh, I'm feeling happier already.
It was made for Paramount. It was, it was one of his films that was in English, and it was not a success. So he was at a pretty dark period.
And I am not surprised to hear that.
And again, this stars, really, the star of this particular June Gloom, Liv Ullmann, who had just released an autobiography of sorts called Changing. It was one of a few books that she wrote. And she told Charles Champlin in January...
A few small books. It's a quote from the movie, you guys. This movie is a laugh riot for 10 to... 15 seconds, and then the rest of it is a nightmare, but...
those 15 seconds, you gotta live it up. She told Charles Champlin in January 1977 that she had already had an idea for another book. She said, quote, "I want to write about the mother and child relationship, the love and the hate of it. I don't know anyone who doesn't have deep feelings on that. It's stronger and more enduring than even the relationship between men and women, because it never stops, even if it turns to hate." I can only guess where she maybe got a little inspiration for that particular subject matter.
Oh, man. Why read that book when you can live it, you know? Yeah. Right.
She was, I mean, her daughter with Ingmar Bergman plays her younger self in the movie, Lynn Ullmann.
But, oh my God, she dragged her own child into this?
Yeah, with her child with Ingmar. Ingmar had, they had been together like 10 years prior, so they were still working together, but had been together for a period. Yeah, never got married, had a child, and then just continued to work together as he went on and married other women. In fact, he had already moved on to his fourth wife. His fourth wife helps this movie because she's a pianist. So...
Pianist? I think you...
Penis. She's a penis. She's a penis.
Wait a minute. I'm just learning all of this because I've done zero research into old in old Ingmar.
Yep.
He had a child with... Can you repeat that again for me? I've had some wine, and so I'm having a hard time keeping up.
he was married, I think, something like 5 times. He had around 9 children with various different mothers.
9 children?
I believe so,
good for him.
See, this is the shit that's exciting, movies aside. Right, this guy was a little...
This guy had,
he
lived
a
life.
He was a stray cat.
Yeah, he, yeah,
fertile.
For sure.
Fertile guy.
So, they had worked together on so many movies together, Liv and Ingmar, but a large part of it, they were together. They were together, they had a kid, and then they broke up, and then he married someone else, and she moved on, but they continued to work together. So,
fascinating. Yeah.
Not every idea needs to be made into a book, right? I mean,
and not every idea needs to be made into a movie. Yeah.
Right.
So,
I mean,
everybody, thank you for watching. You can check out our website, New World Pictures Podcast. Buy a t-shirt.
I think we wrapped it up pretty succinctly there.
Yep.
I mean, this is towards the tail end of his theatrical film career. It sort of goes out in the 80s. This is one of the last films that he made. And then he would direct for TV and continue to direct tons of theater. He was a big-time theater director, Ingmar Bergman. So
I could see that. This felt like a play. This felt a lot like a play.
You know, he really was... he got around.
I can't believe he was pulling in the ladies like that. That's wild.
Yep.
I remember...
Okay, Ingmar, all right.
When we would go for piano lessons, very apropos for this movie.
Oh, man, yeah.
We would frequently have to wait at the bottom of the stairs in the foyer of the home for the next lesson to complete.
For the piano teacher, time, I should say.
For the piano teacher, yeah. Versus just the foyer of a house that our mom would just drop us off at.
Right.
Say, just wait here. I'll be back later.
Wait here in the foyer. I'll be later. Piano teacher will come over and get you.
I have a concert I have to go perform at. Wait in the foyer. I'll come get you.
You really are painting such an elaborate picture of foyers in suburban San Diego. But yeah, I get you.
Right. So for those of you in the Midwest, it would be a mudroom. Okay? Now that we've cleared that up. One of the things that always struck me was while the house did not have a fleet of framed movie posters, there was in the main hallway a framed poster for Fanny and Alexander, Ingmar Bergman movie.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's the movie that you framed? That's the poster that you framed?
Yeah, that's the one.
It's an odd choice. Now, you could argue me having Sorceress back here is an odd choice, too. I get it. I'm not really throwing shade. I'm just saying we all have eclectic movie poster choices in our life.
You know what that tells me? Your music teacher slept with Ingmar.
Yeah.
That's the only possible scenario why they would frame that poster.
Makes sense.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Speaking
of... I always thought Rachel looked a little different than her parents, but...
Yep. That's why.
No one knows. What a cut so deep, one person who's not listening would get it. Speaking of Bergmans, this also stars Ingrid Bergman, no relation to the director, but someone who had wanted to work with Ingmar Bergman for some time. They were supposed to work
because
many,
of the same names.
And
imagine the hilarity that ensued on set. When those two names were scrambled, I bet it was hilarious.
Because, of course, Ingmar was a guy who everybody called him by his last name. He was that kind of
bro. Everybody was like, hey, Berg.
He Bergie?
Bergman, what up, dude?
Hey, Bergman, what up?
You making some sad shit or what?
Ingy, if you're nasty, what's up, dog? So anyway, where should I put these lights, bro? Just real quick, I'm trying to light this. Oh, it's a close up.
Oh,
cool, man. How long is a close up for? Oh, the whole fucking scene. Cool, man. Cool.
Just all
the light right here.
On set letters that they opened and went like, oh no, they misspelled it. Ingmar, no, this one's for you. They always screw this up. Give me Ingmar. It's Ingrid. I get it. It's a simple mistake, but man.
Yeah.
What fun. What hijinks. Think of the blooper reel for this one.
On this thing. The blooper rail must be... the blooper rail? I've had some wine, guys. The blooper reel.
God.
How silly. How Bergman of me. You know what I mean? Just fucking silly.
Pulled a real Berg right there.
Pulled a real Bergman.
Speaking of close-ups, the commentary that's on the Criterion Blu-ray for this movie mentions... that Bergman had always talked about potentially making a movie that exists only in a close-up. And that would be the sole shot. And to that revelation, I said, yeah, no shit. He tries his...
He had the idea for the first live stream.
Yeah.
He did.
Berg was fucking ahead of his time. And I'm not...
Yeah.
That's not the wine talking.
No.
Bergman?
Berg?
Low-key? Bergie?
For real.
Berg was low-key a genius.
And
all right, I'm going to say
on
it.
On the other side of it, Ingrid Bergman was rather surprised at the amount of close-ups that she would get in this movie.
Because Cries and Whispers wasn't enough foreshadowing. She was like, wait, so we're doing this again?
And she,
I
think she slipped him like a note around the time of Cries and Whispers when they were at con together.
Oh my God, so many notes were traded during that.
So many
notes.
It was
like a middle school... It was like a middle school homeroom.
One of them was, I'm pregnant.
The other one, when's my close-up?
And he was like, oh my God, who slipped me this note? It could be any number of women. Who did I impregnate
now? Could be anybody on the set.
I don't know.
Anybody, any lady.
I don't know.
Any lady.
It says Bergman. Oh, no. Oh, how dark. What happened to me? So anyway, she passed a note to him and said, hey, we're supposed to work together. And so he went off. He was doing theater. He got the tax evasion. He wrote this script. Eventually, they do work on this. And I don't know if this was on purpose for that Ingmar did this, but the way he wrote this character. But Ingrid Bergman, she admitted to the Times News Service that the role was not unlike her own life. She said, quote, a lot of it is what I have lived through, leaving my children, having a career. We've certainly had our discussions.
Well, she had conversations, which was a good starting
point. She certainly had conversations, yes. This was Ingrid's first film in her native Swedish in 39 years by that point. She had made movies all over the world, and in particular in the U.S., of course, countless classic black and white films. Casablanca and so many others. Anyone's like, Ingrid Bergman? Never heard of her.
Don't judge people who may or may not have heard of Ingrid Bergman until this podcast. That's not a fair judgment. There's people out there that didn't know that was a person that existed.
That's fine. That's fair. That's fair.
You know what? I don't know if this is the wine talking or this is just my personal opinions that I feel free because of wine to say.
Right.
But... Right. You know, wild. My mind is blown learning all of this.
Yeah.
That was definitely the
wild.
Wine. Yeah, that was a wine comment.
That was 100% the wine.
Officially.
Wild. Anyway, I'll go back on mute, dog. Is Berg cool or?
Berg, you good? Check with
Berg.
You good,
Berg? Need anything? You good, Berg? Or Berg's cool? All right, I'm back on mute, dogs.
She would.
Sorry, did you call for me, dog? No?
Yeah.
All right, my bad, dog. I misread the room. That's probably the wine. That's the wine, dog. The wine is real eager. All right, I'm on mute.
Ingrid Bergman, though, this is her first Swedish language film in so long, and she would be nominated for an Oscar for her role in this. And this would be her last theatrical film role due to her already battling cancer at this point. So she would pass away in 1982, not before. She would star in a TV miniseries, her last role altogether, a TV miniseries called A Woman Called Golda, which was produced by Gene Corman.
Uh-oh.
And he won an Emmy for that TV miniseries, and she would posthumously win an Emmy for her performance in that. And it was quite the trick to get her into it because they couldn't get her insured and everything because the cancer was really taking hold and nobody even knew how much because she passed before it even came out. So
that's a very appropriate story for June Gloom, Ryan.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Does that
so
count
much.
As a nearly new world then? Do we...
Mark, don't!
I feel
don't!
Like...
Is that the wine connecting the dots?
I mean,
is that the wine connecting the dots?
Was... I mean,
shit.
This hop water has got me turnt, guys. So this is going to be a long fucking episode.
Shit, dude.
Ooh, I'm feeling
man.
It.
I know we're not on final questions, but should we hash it all out tonight?
We should. I mean, we need to. That's what this movie's about.
Man, here we go. Ryan, wake up the kids. We got to have some uncomfortable
conversations. We got to wake them up. We got to get uncomfortable, kids. Wake up.
Yeah.
Here's where you can watch Autumn Sonata. It is on the Criterion Channel. It is on HBO Max. And
Tubi.
Criterion Blu-ray.
Oh,
shit. No, sorry.
Gosh.
We're Criterion here only. Wow. Sorry, Tubi. Mm-hmm. Tubi. We are Criterion material only.
The rewatchability of this one is high.
you say Criterion like a real physical media hound.
Criterion? What is it? Oh, Criterion. Oh, of course it's Criterion.
Yeah, Criterion. Come on.
That makes a lot more sense.
You had the wrong emphasis on the... You had the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I was saying Criterion.
Yeah.
I was emphasizing the tier in Criterion.
Tier.
Let's save it for the emphasis cast. Okay, like we
cry. I have had the hardest time getting guests to that podcast.
It's a
tough one.
It is really
it is
tough.
Sorry, guests.
Guests. Yeah, the guests. Or guess, however you want to pronounce it, if you want to be very literal about it.
Almost did a spit take. Audio spit take.
It's time for What's This Movie About, Mark? What is Autumn Sonata about?
When you get sheet music, it comes with the time signature of the composer that wrote the music, but fuck it. Play it however you want. Play it however you feel.
Someone paid attention to not just the movie posters, but the instructions the piano teacher was giving during those lessons, Mark.
Yeah, that's But they're simply a recommendation. You can play it however you want. It's fine.
Erica, what is Autumn Sonata about?
Autumn Sonata is about holding piano players accountable for their crazy wild lives.
That's right. That's right.
You know what, John Tesh? I fucking see you after watching this movie. You know what? Other piano players who are popular? I fucking, you know what, Phantom of the Opera? I fucking see you. You played the piano, right? You know what? What's his name with the glasses? You know what?
Weird Al Yankovic?
Elton John?
Oh, I close. See you.
Weird Al. They're often confused for each other.
No,
often.
Elton John. Often. You played the piano a lot. This movie's about holding piano players accountable for their wild lives, going out, abandoning their children, leaving them with cello players, making them sick. You know what, you crazy wild buffoons? Caught ya. Autumn Sonata. Caught you red-handed.
For me, this movie was about, you know, a minister who just is trying to get Sunday sermon written through a night of yelling and screaming and carrying on. And he's just trying to get prepared for his job.
So true.
Wait, who's the minister?
The husband.
The husband. That's what he does. That's what he does.
I did not catch that. He was a minister. Yeah. That is.
That's why they have a very nice house. And that's what, you know, that,
That's also potentially why at 2 in the morning he didn't walk out the bedroom into the hallway and yell, "Shut the fuck up. I'm trying to fucking
keep
sleep
it
right now.
Down."
Yeah. He was just in there praying they would be quiet. Damn. When did he say that he was a minister?
Very early
in
on.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, you had to read it. So, you know what, guys?
Yeah. No, that's a toughie.
I did my best.
It's a toughie.
I did my best.
It's time to get those new glasses.
I did my best. Yeah, yeah. My glasses are dirty. There was wine involved. I did my best.
Here's the Letterboxd synopsis. We're on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you dare. If we dare you to follow us on Letterboxd. After a 7-year absence, Charlotte Endergast travels to Sweden to reunite with her daughter, Ava. The pair have a troubled relationship. Yep, you could say that.
To say the least.
Charlotte sacrificed the responsibilities of motherhood for a career as a classical pianist?
Pianist.
Pianist. Okay.
Pianist.
Being a classical pianist. A class.
The way you say it, Ryan, sounds like pianist.
It does sound bad.
You're pianist, but you're just, you're going too fast where it's just pianist.
I'm making it one syllable.
Pianist. Yeah.
Pianist.
Yeah.
Pianist.
Criterion.
No,
P-N. Criterion
pianist.
P-N.
P-N. P-N. P-N. The sink. Pianist.
Pianist.
This is actually the whole other podcast. It's just Mark teaching Ryan and I how to say words correctly.
The Emphasis podcast.
It's fun. Tune in. The Emphasis podcast. The Emphasis podcast. I'm cracking myself up.
Over an emotional night, the pair reopen the wounds of the past. Charlotte gets another shock when she finds out that her mentally impaired daughter, we're not sure where exactly it came from, but something, I think it's some sort of disease, right, that sort of made her that way. She,
yes, but she's also physically impaired too. Not,
yes.
So,
so it's, there's
really
something
half
there,
the picture there.
But mentally paints a different picture is what I feel like. Anyway, Helena is out of the asylum and living with Eva. And that is it. And that's pretty mostly accurate.
It's a little bit reversed because she finds out about Helena earlier before they unleash on each other. Charlotte and For Eva sure. unleash on For each sure. other. But it is, it you know, outside of getting the timing of all the reveals wrong, it is correct.
I also just feel like unleash is a real, it sounds like a wild, fun word. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. more like the quietly like, ooh, you know, like you left and such. I don't know.
Yeah.
No.
Guys.
You.
This might be the wine. This might be the wine talking about.
You fell out of love with your own point at the end.
That's what this movie.
You started out with
me.
Like, here's my point, and by the end you're like, I don't know. I'm not as confident about this point.
That's why me and my mom get along. I'm just like, you know what? Never mind. I'm tired.
Look, that Erica, that is exactly my fucking point. Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
There's obviously we're going to dissect this. I'm sure we will. I don't want to, but I'm sure we will. But you can.
This
I
was
get
your
it.
Month, Mark. This was your
yeah,
month.
This is, you were happy
don't
about this month.
You dare.
I loved it.
Ago.
I loved it don't, up until this.
Don't
but,
you dare make it seem like we put you up to the. You chose the month.
Hold on.
Wish. You chose.
You're guys, all naked these. Talking about Richard's things right now. Just, you know, naked, getting some surgeries, talking about Richard's things.
Well, I thought immediately when Leonardo kicked Charlotte out of the hospital room so he could die, it was so that she could leave and he could strip fully naked.
Oh,
and
fully
die.
Nude.
Yep.
He was like, I need
he
you
was
out
like,
of
get
here.
Get her out of here.
The room was
These
so
pants
hot,
need
too.
To come off.
It was too
hot.
Hot.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need
yeah.
to go
like,
the way
it's
I came
too
in.
Fucking hot
right
out.
Now.
I got to strip down.
Yeah.
Get out of this room.
Yeah.
But my point is this. If you have all this pent up resentment and anger, I mean,
you're talking to me.
Eva
right?
is Eva is in her. Yes, I'm talking specifically to you, Ryan. Erica, you can leave. This is just a conversation for Ryan and I now.
See you, dogs. Going back on mute.
But she's in her 40s at this point.
Sure.
What's the fucking point?
Sure, sure.
Not whatever you needed to say needed to have been said a long time ago.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
not going to change your mom's. Whole
not
personality.
Now. Not now.
You're not going to. Nothing's going to get better outside of you getting a bunch of shit off your shoulder. That's just going to make your mom feel like shit, and it doesn't change. The outcome doesn't change at all. I hate when people do this.
Spoilers
like,
for
I
the
gotta
ending
go.
Of Autumn Sonata.
There, you should. No, there's no spoilers. This movie has zero. Spoilers.
I'm a muting dog. That's the whole movie. Nothing so, happens.
Yeah, nothing
and then
happens.
It's a fight and it ends.
I hate when people do this over there. Like I just need to give them a piece of my mind. Okay. If you think that there could be a benefit at the end of that, outside of satisfying your own narcissistic point of view, then great. But if you're just doing it because you think you're entitled and you can tell, like, fuck it, I'm just going to say what I want. Yeah, the wine certainly will unlock it. And I'm guilty as charged. So, but you have to look at the end of the equation and say, I'm going to yell at her and she's going to know how I feel. If you can't confidently say this is going to positively change your relationship, fucking keep it bottled up, let the ulcers take over and die miserably
like the rest of us. Welcome to the rest of us. You think you're so
yeah.
fucking
you know
unique?
What I 100% agree with that, because as an oldest daughter, guess what, it ain't getting any better. This is it. Mm-hmm. You can bitch and moan all you want.
Yeah,
this is it.
Well, I will say this in her defense in this small amount is that it's been...
Oh, you would, youngest
oh,
child.
Youngest
here
child
we go.
Coming
Take
in.
Mom's
Being
side.
Like, oh,
okay.
Yeah,
just
but,
saying.
You know,
she,
yeah,
here
she,
we go.
You're absolutely right, Mark. But she, this what they haven't seen each other in 7 years. So she's been carrying this stuff over from her 30s. And a time when you probably should have had that out if you were going to bother. And she...
Dog, she's been carrying it since she was, like, whatever the first time it happened.
Yeah, like 6 years
old. Was looking in the mirror and...
She hasn't seen her for so long that her daughter has lived an entirely different life. Had peaks and valleys. Had whole, like, life moments that her mother has no clue. Doesn't know where she lives. Never met her husband. Didn't know the other daughter was living there. Doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
Like that 7 years was key... life moments that her mom has not been a part of. So at this point, you just go, She's only going to be here for a couple days. Let's just be cool.
Also,
we'll have we went to Costco and stocked up on wine, so we'll be good. And then she'll be out.
So many, and then the husband's like, "We had 6 bottles of wine, and there is one. There's one. She was here one night.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah.
And I am bought more,
and we are out of wine and sleeping pills.
Yeah,
like what the hell am I gonna do tonight?
So I told you to get the case of Ménage à Trois, but you wanted to fucking go cheap and get 6 bottles.
Yeah, you learned. Just get a whole case. And now, after I do the sermon tomorrow, I'm going to be jacked because I'm just going to have all that energy because I did the sermon, and I'm not going to have any wine. Barely going to have any wine. I'm going to barely
have any
sleeping
pills. How am I
going to
take the edge
off? How am I supposed to come down from that fucking sermon I've been working on all weekend? God.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he'll come down because he also hasn't slept all weekend, so he's got to catch up on sleep.
He's so exhausted.
I'll just say it. I know we're not things we love, things we hate, but that guy was boring.
Yeah, he didn't.
That husband
he didn't yell at anybody
boring,
the entire weekend. What was his problem?
Boring. He yelled at no one, and he like, gave compliments from a creepy distance.
That was his thing.
I'm sorry, but if you're looking at me, Ryan, and I'm not paying any attention, and you're like, "Oh man, I love her so much," you better just shout across the room, "I just love you so much." And if I'm like, "Huh?" Just, it's fine, but try.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, the movie starts with, like, an ultimate...
That guy's love was the best kept secret ever.
Yeah, the movie starts with, like, a really sad admission that the husband who talks to the camera basically says, "Hey, that's my wife over there, and, like, I wish I could tell her I love her, but I can't." I'm like, boy, we all wish you could, because if you had... I mean, granted, we wouldn't have this movie, I guess, because maybe she would be like, "You know what? Forget my mom. Like, what do I care?
Perhaps,
you know, let it all go.
You should
I got
say
this
it.
Guy who loves me, you know, whatever." And, like, maybe you should
and this
just
guy's
say
a minister,
it.
So is he coaching others?
Oh, my God.
So what is he telling the people in his parish? Like, "I don't know, if you love your wife, just keep it the best
keep,
kept secret
keep it
in town."
Keep
like,
it in.
What a terrible...
Keep it in.
Man.
Or have a bunch of wine and maybe it'll come out, but that's my best, the best I can do for you.
Plus, this movie starts off with the husband giving a speech how... he wants to tell his wife that he loves her wholeheartedly, but she'll never believe him, which we learn why that's possible. It's not because she doesn't understand the words coming out
but
of his mouth.
But also, he'll start laughing the minute he starts to do it.
Right. I'm sorry. Hold on. I'll do it again.
Oh,
I'll
just
do
let
it
me,
again.
I want to do this sincerely. Not...
Right. So then they...
Armpit fart! I love you!
It's the only way I can get it out. It's the only way I can get it out. I really do mean this sincerely. She's like, "I don't believe
Man.
You. I'm going to say I love you jackass style."
I am going to say I love you and then have the snake bite the tip of my penis. Okay?
Actually, I might let the snake do its thing and then say I love you. I hope that's cool because I really, we're filming and we've got 3 cameras and I don't want to ruin it.
We can't burn through this
that
much film.
That brings me to my next point. Do we see the latest Jackass movie in the theater? Or do we wait until it's streaming? What
the
is
thought
it?
Of the husband in this getting the snake biting his penis when he tries to say I love you. I'm sorry. It's really, it's getting the better of me right now. I'm sorry.
That's not the wine. That's just
Me. Huh. That's just me. That's not the
that's
wine.
Just that's pure
just
rye.
So they get a letter that the mom's love interest, whatever, has died. So they invite her to come over.
Yeah.
So okay, that happens right at the jump.
Right at the beginning. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the cold open of this movie. Incidentally, before I finish my thought. I thought they were playing a joke at how fucking long the opening credits are for this one. This was like the opening credits to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I was like, is this going to go on forever?
They should have just ran the credits during the movie, just in the background.
I was like,
whole movie
are you
names.
Making up cast and production staff at this point? Because this is sure. ridiculous.
Why not?
Mom comes over, finds out that Helena's there. Totally bummed. Comes over, talks about herself, bummed about Helena, talks about herself some more, talks to herself in the bedroom because she doesn't want to cry, which I guess if you don't want to cry, light a cigarette and start talking to yourself and then you'll never cry. Then they play some piano, which takes forever. They don't even sit down to eat dinner until 32 minutes into this movie.
No.
This movie seems like it was edited for New World. Because if the director was given to his own devices, it would be a six-hour film. Is that a correct assumption?
Honestly, no. I don't think it was edited down by New World. I do believe it was edited the way it was. Because New World simply distributed this. So they didn't have anything to do with probably the edit. But you're right. Like, given his natural instincts, I am shocked that he only wrapped this thing up in 90 minutes. In fact, when we started the movie, I looked at the box because I was like, how long is this thing?
Yeah.
I believe The Serpent's Egg, which he did before this, that's a 2-hour long movie. This is 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So lucky
it's
us.
It's 90 minutes that feels like 270 minutes, though. Like, I kept checking and I kept being like, how much more time? Oh, man.
He said it's like a 3-act play. And what is act one? She shows up. Act two is one long night where they talk and talk and talk. And then act three is like, really?
Goodbye.
That's it? Like, she's on the train and, you know, she's
yeah.
in the... Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the three acts are. There's not a lot
that's
going
it.
On.
Those are the three acts.
And so...
That's how dumb plays are, Ryan. Yeah. She arrives, they fight, she leaves. Like, play,
yo,
done.
Berg, are we going to go see a play tonight? Are we going to see another dumb play? What are we doing, Berg?
Oh, man. Hey, Berg. My old lady's trying to get me to cat on a hot tin roof. I don't think so, dog. I'm allergic. You know what I mean? See you later, dog.
Not to cats, but to hot tin roofs. You know what I'm saying, dog?
Are we going to the cast party? Oh, we're still filming? Shit, Berg, I'm sorry. Shit. All right.
Oh, shit. I thought we were done, dude.
Thought we were done, dog. We did so many close-ups.
Oh.
So the mom comes in and she's like immediately only fucking talking about herself.
Wait, what act are we in? One?
We're in one.
What act are we in?
We're okay. in one. Then she gaslights her daughter because her daughter's husband told the mom that she didn't think that the daughter really loved him. So she, of course, immediately
didn't
tells
love
the
it
daughter
all.
Because
she didn't love at all.
Right, and she was incapable of love. So the mom immediately just tells the daughter because she's a fucking shit stirrer and is just like, I got this one on you. And that, I think, is the moment. That plus the wine is the moment that Eva decides, all right, I'm going to fucking let you have it. And that is act two, which is... Act two is bookended by 10 minutes at the beginning of act one and 5 minutes of act three. Act two is just them, basically just Eva just fucking tearing into her mom for an hour and 10 minutes.
This is a really confusing playbill. Is this the first draft or is this the final that we're handing out to audience members, dog?
Also,
I think they're going to be a little confused, man. It seems like we don't know when to tell people it's okay to go to the bathroom. I don't know.
No intermission, dog. No intermission.
No intermission.
I was going to ask.
We got to sell some M&Ms.
We just...
Where would you drop an intermission in? I mean, where would be a good point?
You definitely want some M&Ms for this movie, for sure.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do an intermission because people would not come back.
M&Ms? Nobody wants peanut butter, dog.
Oh,
they
gross,
want peanut.
Dude, those are called Reese's Pieces, dude. They're
Thank
not M&Ms.
You.
What the hell?
Or
did you ever
Reese's
watch
E.T.? Pieces, and I'll save that for the emphasis cost.
Fair enough. One note I wrote down during this movie watching it was like, Eva was so excited to have her mom after not seeing her for so many years. Why were they apart for so long? And then like act two starts and you're like, oh okay, oh no, now I get it, now I really get it. And then you're like, by the end you're like, oh, I really get it. And then like by the eighth flashback you're like, okay, I get it. I know.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah.
I get it. Why
Charlotte
you guys...
was not nice to Eva.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? Watching it and seeing this, one of the flashbacks where Charlotte, the mom, is playing the piano and she takes a break. And little Eva opens the sliding doors to bring her in some coffee. And Charlotte's like, oh, thanks for the coffee. And then immediately picks up her newspaper and then is like, leave me alone.
I want to be by myself.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I guess that's just the equivalent of being like, oh, my kid's playing. I'll just look at my phone. Yeah. Think peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Think about it. Think peace, dude.
Dog.
Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah. I'm writing a thesis on Berg saying, how does Autumn Sonata relate to modern times?
Right.
So DM me with your ideas, bro. I'm trying to write this thing legitty. I'm not trying to go the aoi. I'm trying to write it myself. So DM me with your ideas and we will write this thesis paper together.
Bergman's TikToks would have been like 20 minutes long, dude.
Oh. All close up, 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
I mean,
just a full like, hey everyone, it's me, Bergman, just here to talk to you about, you know, parents, being a parent. It's hard. That's why I just do it halfway a bunch of times. I just get the ladies pregnant and I bounce.
Would it surprise you that his kids and Ingmar Bergman himself have admitted that Ingmar was not really a great dad?
Oh, there it is. There it is.
Would it shock
there
you?
It is.
Would it
shock
There's
you?
The quote. Wait.
There's the quote. Would it shock you to learn Ingmar, not a great dad? Click the link to learn more. Like and subscribe.
Right.
Like and subscribe to hear more. Yeah.
Get into it.
Are you telling
it.
Me
that? Get into the yeah. show.
Are you telling me the guy who did Cries and Whispers, Whispers and Cries in Autumn Sonata wasn't a good dad?
Oh, holy that just shit. Made me think. Do you think that's where John Woo got got this face thing
going?
From
Hold
Face
on.
Off? Did he get it from Cries and Whispers? Do you
yes,
think?
He
For
did.
Sure.
Do you think?
For sure.
He did.
Did I bring yeah. this up during Cries and Whispers?
If he could have just put a little blood... If he could have just had a little
he would
blood
have.
There, oh,
he would have.
You would have totally done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So unsanitary. Are we at Things We Love, Things We Hated yet?
Yeah, we are. We are. Let's go for it.
Oh, we are?
Sure.
Oh.
Oh, we are. Here's the thing. I'll start with Things I Loved.
You're not even going to do the whole thing?
Dude.
We're already there. We're
okay,
already past
let's
it.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
We're already there. Okay. No, it doesn't warrant a song or a warm intro. I'm just going to get into it. Dear Mark and Ryan, okay. Here's something I loved.
Okay.
I did love the flashbacks.
Sure.
As dark.
Sure.
And as difficult as they were to watch,
mm-hmm.
I did love it because it gave you something because you're just introduced to this seemingly sad situation with a husband and a wife. You see a black and white photo of a child on the desk and you're like, oh, this can't be good.
Right.
Nobody has a picture like that for a good reason, you know,
mm-hmm.
like something terrible has happened to this family. And so I appreciated the flashbacks to just learn about this mom, because then the mom comes in and you can tell it's strained and she's a lot, but you don't know why. And so I did love is a strong word, but I did enjoy the flashbacks
sure.
because I feel like that gave us a glimpse of what it was like to just be in her orbit your entire life. And she's exhausting and selfish and, all of the things, but you don't know that about her when she just arrives. She kind of gets out of the car and stretches her back and asks for help with her bags. Like she's normal, maybe, you know, a little demanding, but doesn't seem too, you know, too difficult. So I did appreciate those.
Well, it's also those flashbacks, I think, are where Sven Nykvist, the cinematographer who worked with Bergman a whole lot, that's really where he shines, are in those flashbacks. Because those are really, like, the way he composes all those shots are so good. Mark, what is something you loved?
I loved when Charlotte, after the night of arguing and wine, she comes downstairs and Eva's in the parlor. And she lays down on the ground because her back hurts. Because, I mean,
I felt
get
that.
It.
I felt that.
Totally get it.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, yeah. No,
I want to do that right
that's
now.
Clutch.
To be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. As I'm talking about it.
I wish
thinking,
I could.
Mm-hmm. I could carry this mic with me and just lay
Can
down.
Can I just hold the
back.
Mic as I lay down on the floor?
Yeah. So I absolutely loved that scene.
I know we're not at final questions, but do you think her back really hurt? Or is that her, like, oh, my back, don't, my back hurts, bother me. I felt like her back didn't really hurt.
I didn't believe anything she said.
Way to...
That is something actually that is true because, and Bergman knew because of his ex-wife who taught the women in this film to play the piano and does the piano playing. This is like his fourth wife. She's a Estonian, Kabi Larate, and so she had to sit upright, and that's one of the things that she would talk about is like how much her back hurt all the time, because you practice for hours and hours and you have to sit upright, and it just kills your back. So apparently that's a real thing.
Yeah, or you could do that just sitting at your keyboard and your computer desk all day long. So.
Yeah, you could also have the posture of a fucking banana, and that also makes your back hurt. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, something I loved. I actually loved the opening scene of the husband talking about the wife, only in that, well, it ultimately is, of course, sad, like the rest of the movie. But the moment, just the fact that he's breaking the fourth wall, I really thought that was going to be a conceit that carried through the whole film. This hope was quickly dashed. But for a moment, I thought, oh, that's an interesting way to, like, frame a movie, is like, I'm going to occasionally, while other characters are seen in the background, I'm going to talk to you, the audience, about it. And it kind of comes back at the end, but not really. It kind of is only done in the beginning, and that's it. But for a moment, I was like...
So glad you mentioned that, Ryan. That's absolutely what I hated. I fucking hated that. I hated it so much.
Nice.
Because I was like, what is the point? There was no point. And exactly. It happens one time, and it's done, and you're like, what... Are we in on this? Are we not?
Not only that, but he becomes stupid. Like a very... I mean, he comes back for like a scene and talks to the mom and then just like floats back into the wall. Like, he's not really necessary. And granted, he's not necessary. It's about the mom and it's about the daughter. It's about the two of them. But like, then why start with him? Why even...
Yeah, exactly. Why?
Yeah.
Just...
Yeah. So you know what? I hate it too. And now it's what I hated. But... What I did love then is something else I just thought of, which is I love the fact that she was like, I'm going to wear this fucking red dress and show them that I'm not even mourning my dead boyfriend slash husband or whatever it was. And then she goes down with that red dress and she doesn't even know she's about to get a wine-fueled rant for the rest of the night. She has no clue.
With a titch of Prosecco just at the beginning, just to get the engines fired up.
Just to set a base.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I love, that red dress. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated that there's just no fucking point. There's no fucking point to this.
Okay.
There's no point
to the movie. Okay.
Everyone ends the movie sadder than when they started, and all they had to do was just go to bed. Just go to bed.
Go right. Yeah. Sleep this off.
Yeah. You'll be fine. No big deal. She was going to leave anyway. So, fucking, what's the point?
I thought you would hate her decision on cars, Mark.
No, she left on her Mercedes. They didn't name the actual model, though. And I don't even know if she got it.
I don't know. Did she leave it for him, though?
I don't know. We never find out.
Never found out.
Another thing I hated from the book Images by Ingmar Bergman, he talks about his original conceit of the movie. And there's not many scenes in this movie, so you'll know what I'm saying when I say, like, the scene between the mother and the daughter in the son's room was something that he had happening first before they then go to the piano and play the piano and literally fucking stare at each other for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them stare at each other. They both take moments of just staring at the other while they play. That scene ends up happening first in the movie. Then they have the scene. I'm like, no, you had it right the first time. You have them talk. Let us know who these people are. As Mark was saying, we don't know the mom has missed out on some hugely significant parts of their lives.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what tells us. And then when we get into them playing piano, it like, okay, then those long stares make way more sense. But we get the stares first. And then we get into the meat of what's happening. I'm like, what the fuck were we staring at each other for? We figure it out, but it's like,
because
it would have had more impact if you'd swapped them.
One part that was cut is that right before the piano scene, Victor said the mozzarella sticks are about 5 minutes away from being done. So don't go anywhere.
They're going to be so crispy. You're going to love them, dudes.
But they didn't hear him because he said it to the audience. We were all like, mozzarella sticks? That'd be fucking great, dog. Where?
That would have been my favorite scene.
Everyone watching at home like got up and made mozzarella sticks and missed a long part of the movie.
Yep.
I guess favorite scene? Yeah, let's do it. Favorite scene.
D, none of the above.
Mark, favorite scene?
There is a scene, and it's just, I appreciate the acting and the cinematography. There's a scene where Eva is bitching out her mom, like most of the movie. But there's one scene in particular where it's one long shot, and she keeps walking from behind her, from one shoulder. And the mom is not looking at her, you know, because Eva's behind her, and she's saying all this stuff. So you're getting the reaction of the mom as she goes through this speech of all the things that she did wrong growing up. And it's a really long scene, and it keeps panning as Eva moves from one shoulder back to the other again. And I just really appreciate, like, you took a lot of time. There's a lot of memorization there. You get to see in real time the mom's reaction to every word, every accusation, and I thought it was really well done. It's still fucking pointless, but I really appreciate it. Like, that's well shot, well directed, well acted, well done. Just, I wish they were talking about anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, my favorite scene was when Charlotte, the mom, takes a couple sleeping pills. She's asleep and she feels like hands on her face and she wakes up and no one's in the room. I was like, legit nightmare fuel right there. That was fucking horrible.
Now, if that had been the moment to change this into a very different movie, we'd be having a different conversation.
Right. Right. If he decided to go, oh yeah, there's a fucking ghost in the house, y'all. Like, then I would have been like, shit, this movie rules. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I want to see Bergman tackle ghosts and a mother and daughter who hate each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I would have been in.
But again, hated it because it happens one time and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this woman has the lightest of demons. You know? Like, oh, a demon that just touches your face and hand as you're trying to fall asleep. Oh, no.
Delicate demon.
Delicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's go to final questions. Here are our final questions for Autumn Sonata. You think mom's ever coming back for another weekend?
Oh, hell no. Never. Never. She missed 7 years, and she's like, I have no reason to ever go back. And, oh, something else I loved.
Yeah.
I loved her agent who fucking says nothing.
Oh, yeah.
He is relegated to saying nothing in this movie.
A lot of it, I believe, was the actor didn't know much, like, English, and she was speaking in English. But, yeah. I love that.
Because that's who she keeps in her life. She keeps people in her life who don't question her, don't push back on her, don't say anything. All right, there. I liked that. Good job, Ing.
Yeah.
Ing, are those poppers in the oven, dude?
We're all out of Maz sticks. We're moving on to jalapeno poppers. Moving on to poppers, bro.
But dude, sorry. Real talk. You're out of ranch. You're out of ranch, bro. Ing.
The crew needs ranch, Ing.
We just gotta pop over to the supermarket and
Man, if you think the eggs caused a stink in Richard's things, those jalapeno poppers on set would be rough. Yeah.
Oh, and
the smell in that house. Imagine smokers, old pianos.
Ingmar coffee. Makes his own ranch, so like that house just reeks of raw ranch.
Raw Ranch is actually the name of the brand, so we're not just like trying.
Yeah, no,
funny.
That's what it's called.
Raw Ranch. What it's called. It's called Ingmar's Raw Ranch.
That's the shirt. That's the shirt. It's like a Paul Newman esque.
Paul Newman. I was about to say.
It's like a Paul Newman esque.
He's like
Ingmar's Raw Ranch.
All the proceeds goes to charity.
The charity is supporting my 9 children.
They don't know me very well, but they will know my dressing.
They will know flavor.
Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Huh. Do you think Eva's husband even put that letter in the mail?
No.
No.
He's so fucking lazy. Yeah. He was like, fuck, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I'm going to the post office. I didn't go to the post office to do your work.
And you know what? He's fucking thirsty for more drama.
Yeah.
He wants a revisit and a rehash. Where's going to the post office?
Exactly.
The most dramatic place you can go.
Truly.
He goes there for the drama. He stops letters. He's like, I'll put that in the post box for you. Rip.
Committing crimes. Say what you will about the entire evening, but Charlotte gave Eva some good advice on her piano playing. Do you think she'll take it?
Yeah. I hope so, because she sucks at piano. So, yeah, I really hope she implements it immediately.
The advice she should have given...
That was painful to watch.
The advice she should have given is fucking follow the time signature that's on the sheet music. It's right there.
Yeah, it tells you.
It's right there. It tells you.
Yeah.
It doesn't just tell you what notes. It tells you how long and or how short to play them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Did I hear that from our collective piano teacher often?
Yeah. That was only second to, you didn't really practice this week, did you?
So that was what would follow, and I would be like, damn, you are right. Every week I keep thinking I'm going to fool you, but I have not. She'd break out the metronome, and I'd be like, fuck, you want me to follow that? I don't know this shit well enough. Speaking of that, Mark, since we're here, you, me, our sister, we all had to take piano lessons. Was this the life our parents were thinking we would have eventually?
Have some wine to find out, dog.
Wow.
Break out the wine at Thanksgiving. Let's ask.
Let's hear it.
Meaning us having Charlotte's life? One of us being the one?
Yes. Right.
No, I think they were just satisfied with us playing on the weekends when the grandparents would come over.
All right, let's get into some quick research. So in his book, Images, Ingmar Bergman claims the idea for this movie came to him after he was acquitted. He said that he couldn't go to sleep in spite of the sleeping pills. So we know where that comes from. So he says, it occurs to me that I want to make a film about the mother-daughter relationship, and I must have Ingrid Bergman and Liv Ullmann in the two roles and no one else. Eventually, there may be room for a third character. He fits some other characters in there for sure. He completed the script well over a year before they started shooting. They started shooting September 20th, 1977, with 2 weeks of rehearsal prior to that. Let me tell you, newspapers were plugged into this movie happening because I found a picture of Ingrid and Liv going into rehearsal. They were like, let's get this in the newspaper. It was not particularly easy working with Ingrid Bergman. As good old Ing mentions in his book, he said, the actual filming was draining. I did not have what one would call difficulties in my working relationship with Ingrid Bergman. Rather, it was a kind of language barrier, but in a profound sense. I discovered early into our rehearsals that to be understanding and offer a sympathetic ear did not work. In her case, I was forced to use tactics that I normally rejected, the first and foremost being aggression. Once she told me, if you don't tell me how I should do this scene, I'll slap you. I rather liked that, but from a strictly professional point of view, it was difficult to work with these two actresses together. And he explains a bit more in the intro to the Criterion disc, where he says she was really practicing for theater. That's what she was really, like, prepared for. The shooting was done in Norway because, of course, he wasn't living in Sweden. So he actually shot all the exteriors, and the interiors were done in a studio in Norway. A rather old, fairly, like, not dilapidated, but it was, like, old. Bergman edited the film back in Munich, where he was living at the time. ITC Entertainment picks up the U.S. rights before the production even began in August 1977, I think. And... Then because ITC Entertainment, they didn't actually distribute movies at the time. They didn't have a distribution wing. So it fell again to Corman. And Corman, of course, had already released Cries and Whispers in the United States. So it worked out. And then it does open in the fall of 1978. And it earned over $2 million in rentals for New World Pictures. Mm. And it earned two Academy Award nominations. Of course, one was from Ingrid Bergman. And also Best Screenplay as well for the other Bergman. And it won a Golden Globe for Best Foreign Film. Something that Corman was extremely proud of was like that they released so many foreign movies in the span of time. And they so many of them won Best Foreign Language Film or won Oscars or were nominated. Like they had more nominations for some of the movies they released than many of the other studios, if not all the other studios. So he was very proud of that streak. Lastly, in researching this, I happened to come across a quote about Autumn Sonata spoken to the Daily Hampshire Gazette in October 1979 by none other than George Romero.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. All right.
He says this, "A lot of things aren't movies. A friend of mine said movies are like jazz is to music. They're a popular form. So many people forget that that's what they are, a popular form. It's disturbing when people can't simply sit back and enjoy a film without intellectualizing. I mean, what's Autumn Sonata? It's not a movie. It's a great script. There are great acting performances in it. I can't even say it's well directed as a piece of cinema, except that the actors are well directed. It's not a movie. It's something else."
But technically, it's a movie. So
save it for the semantic cast.
It's like it played in movie theaters. But it is a movie.
It is a movie by definition. By definition, it is a movie.
By definition, it is a movie, George. Mm-hmm. So,
but it kind of summed up a lot.
You could call it a talkie, but that's still a movie.
So. And it is a talkie.
You call it a saddie.
It definitely is a talkie.
Yeah.
It kind of summed up what I felt about this movie. Great performances. The performances are absolutely fantastic in this movie. The script is like dark and sad and emotional, but it's well shot. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
Sven Nykvist did an incredible job. It's so well composed. And yet,
it's still a movie.
And that is it. That is it. For Autumn Sonata and for June Gloom 2, Down to Frown. Did you frown enough, guys? How you feeling about June Gloom?
That's what I feel. I mean, the audience knows. Oh. The audience knows how I feel.
Oh, man. Erica, how you feeling? We made it through another June Gloom.
Oh, feeling sad, dog. Feeling sad, you know? Like, shoot. But I guess that's what it's all about.
It is. It's exactly what this whole theme month is about. And we hope you enjoyed it. If you want to listen to our past episodes, you can go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where we have all of our episodes, our articles. We have a new interview up there from last month from Mark's Miserable Marvelous May with Patrick Labrateau. Go check that out. Articles, t-shirts. Get yourself a t-shirt. There's also an article about how Roger Corman got into doing foreign language films. So that's very, you know, in keeping with this entire episode. So go check that out. And or we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description.
The audio commentary. It's a dying art form, but here at One Track Mind, I, your wonky yet affable host, Ryan Luis Rodriguez, analyze film through the prism of these embryonic forms of podcasting, one audio commentary at a time. Masterpieces, crapsterpieces, live action, animation, cult classics, films literally no one has ever heard of. No track is too small and no track is too big. Join me and my guests from the entertainment world as we keep these features alive every other Tuesday. Hey, who else is going to discuss Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey one week and Citizen Kane the next? Us, that's who. Sure, you have to put up with my voice, but there's a certain give and take in this industry. That's One Track Mind, part of the Someone's Favorite Productions family, and available wherever you get your podcasts.